What I would like to do is ask you at this moment to just think of something in the physical plane that could never experience darkness. Not possible for it to know darkness, could never know it, no matter how strongly you search for it. This is something in the physical plane that could never know darkness, and that would be the sun. The sun. And it's the only thing that could never know darkness. And why is it that the sun could never know darkness? Because the sun is the source of all light. Now here's the aha. Here's the eureka. Here's what 3 hours has been about. In order to transcend the duality of the physical plane, you must go to your source. You must find your source. And in the process of finding your source, you go past the rules and the restrictions and the limitations of that which is in the dual plane. And that's why they call these people who have discovered their source non-dual beings. They live in this world over here. And as a result of living in this world, they have the gift of fish and loaves. They can feed the hungry from their consciousness because they have transcended the duality of hunger and non-hunger. They have transcended the duality of healing. When I did research on and talked to some of the great kahunas, the teaching kahunas down in Polynesia, they said that healing is nothing more. These simple, very elementary kinds of healing people, they would say the reason that they have a healing capacity is because they're knowing that they have the capacity to heal is stronger than the belief that someone else has that it's not possible. And when that knowing, which is stronger than the belief that it can't, meets, it alters the rules of the physical plane. And that's why Jesus was a healer. Because his knowing was connected to this city consciousness. And I've had people who have literally come to me who have such a strong faith in and believe in me, which I totally do not deserve, and I'm not interested in being, but because their knowing was so strong, they have actually been able to be healed. Because that knowing transcended, and they believe that it comes from me, when of course it doesn't. That universal divine energy is in all things. That's why it's called universal, which means there's no place that it's not. And so healing, the kahunas talk about the life force as being like electrical in nature. And being electrical in nature, what it does is it has an invisible kind of flow, just like electricity does. And so if you want to practice healing, I think of the healing energy as like water. Water is a symbol that is used for healing. And water, because water, if you want to get a hold of water and you try to grab it, you can't have any of it. But if you just relax and just allow yourself to enter it, you will experience it. The minute that you try to hang on to it or demand it to do anything or tighten your grip on it, it will elude you. And so, when you worry about healing, one of the things I have practiced in life for a long time that has kept me relatively busy has been the use of water. The brain is 85% water. 85% of the cell tissue of your brain is water. And 70% of your body, the rest of your body, is water. Pain, virtually all pain, not all pain, but virtually all pain, almost all pain, is a symptom of dehydration in the system. You have migraines. I learned this from a prison doctor who didn't have anything else but water to treat his patients with. And you have a glass of water, and you ask yourself, is the pain still there? And then you take a third glass of water, 8-10 ounces of water, and then even if you have to take a fourth, by the time you've taken that fourth glass, generally speaking, you will feel the pain begin to dissipate. For people with ulcers, for people with pains located anywhere, the pain is registered through this nerve tissue, the cell tissue of the brain, which is in a state of dehydration most of the time, because most of us simply do not drink enough water. The life force, the life energy. It's just always flowing. It's inexhaustible. It's always in a state of transformation. It's what your body is made up of. It's totally what your brain is made up of. You try it the next time. And try drinking 8 to 10 glasses of water every day. Without fail. Every day. And the next time you have a pain any place, in your back, in your neck, in your toe, in your head, in your feet, in your stomach, you just try drinking water. Just, and ask yourself, how much do I have to take before the pain goes away? The life force to flow back within you. Dehydration and pain have a very strong connection. Between every thought and the place located in your body or in the body of someone else. You can imagine electrical flow. And on this current, you have capacity to will. And on this will, you can literally put waves of healing towards it on your consciousness. Between the pain there and the thought, you visualize where you're on this current. Your will. Your will is more restless. And you fill yourself with water. You finally begin to dissipate 70% of the whole surface of the planet. And it meets every criteria for the description of the life force, the God force. It's in all things. And so, now you figure out, how do I get to my source? And what is my source? How do I get over here to my source? And knowing that the sun cannot experience darkness because it is the source, when you talk to the great Nagules, who are referred to, the spiritual teachers, in the Native American tradition, they're referred to as sorcerers. And the word sorcerer means of the source. It doesn't mean magicians and black magic and weird stuff. It means of the source. And the people who are of the source or living at their source are people who are in balance and in perfect health. Mentally, physically. And it's a choice every single one of you can make almost instantaneously. It's called getting into that zone. And that might be something you want to take a look at as well. That new kind of approach to weight loss. And not just weight loss, but being in the proper mood and being energized and needing less sleep and feeling like you're on target and that you're in that place that athletes call the zone, where you just can't miss and everything just seems to be working and everything is flowing. When you begin to balance what it is that you're putting into your system and have an awareness of it. And so going to your source, the source over here, the sun, which is the source that doesn't allow darkness, can be thought of as silence when you are attempting to become a manifester. You are trying to go to the place that can no longer be divided. What number mathematically does that represent? Zero. You go to zero. When you divide zero, what do you get? More zero. When you multiply by zero, what do you get? More zero. And there's only one zero. It's like you don't get a zero and I get a zero, and zero is zero. It is no thing. Silence is the same. Silence is the place that you go to which can no longer be divided. You don't get a separate silence from me. You don't have a separate silence. Melville said, God's one and only voice is silence. In order to know God, which means in order to know that which is able to manifest, you have to go to your silence, to the place within you where you reconnect that can no longer be divided. And that's why Pascal said that all of man's troubles stem from his inability to sit quietly in a room alone. When you learn to meditate, to go get quiet, and to know God, not to know about God. Knowing about God comes from the tribe. Knowing God comes from going to your source. Going to your source means leaving the duality of the physical plane. This is what I've been leading up to. This is like, there's such an insight in this for me. It seems so crystal clear to me. I don't know if it is to you. But as I process this with my left brain, I know that it was when I began to meditate, it was when I began to no longer see myself as this physical being, that I got into this space. And when you get into it, and go here, and know how to go here on a regular basis, virtually anything can be transcended. Today, I am a camel. You've probably heard me talk about it. I certainly wrote about it in Your Sacred Self. And I'm very honest and open about all of the areas of my life that I have had to work at and transcend. One of them has been addictions. And they were all choices. One of them has been being overweight. All choices. Nobody is overweight by accident. Food never enters your body accidentally. It's always a choice. And other things that I have worked on, I have written about over the years as I have learned this. And one of the things I learned about addictions is that over here in the physical plane, and everybody in this room has them of one kind or another. You may not be doing cocaine at night. You may not be smoking marijuana. You may not even be drinking alcohol. But you may be smoking cigarettes, or you may be drinking caffeine or pouring that into your system, or eating sugars that are not good for you, or keeping your life and your body out of balance in one way or another by not balancing what it is that you are putting in and just being aware of that. Or you might be addicted to your past and to all of the stuff that the tribe has taught you, and you don't know how to leave that addiction. Or you might be addicted to approval or fear. But there are addictions in almost all of us who are residing over here in the physical plane. One of the things about addictions is that everything over here in the physical plane has three elements to it. Every addiction has three elements to it. There is the craver. That is you. Or me. The body. That is craver. There is the craving, which is a thought. A mental process. And there is that which is craved. All three of those are over here in the physical domain. The craver, the craving, and that which is craved. And how do you transcend the duality of the physical plane? An addiction is an absence of congruence. An absence of congruence between what you think, what you feel, and what you behave. How you behave. You think one thing, someone defined addictions as never getting enough of what you don't want. Because that's the ego. Remember, the ego will always give you a new list. No matter how much you give it, there's a new list the next day. It's never satisfied. So the way that you transcend addictions is you get over here at your source. You go to your source and you observe this thing over here that is craver, craving, and craved. You look at it. You notice it. You put your attention on it. And you recognize that that's not you. Who I am is not that which is craving or a craver or... And as I begin to notice that, I shift. And as I said, I'm a camel today. And I wasn't for a good part of my life. A camel is an animal who starts his day out on his knees. And he ends his day on his knees. And he can go 24 hours without a drink. And there was a time when I didn't and couldn't. And when I played around with substances. When I fooled around with a lot of the things that I find addictive. And now, I feel so damn superior, I can hardly stand myself when I'm around that stuff. I mean, you could bring it all up here, right on stage, you know, as much cocaine as you could want, and as much booze as you could want, and all of the great, you know, stuff that I used to go after, those great foreign beers, you know, that Foster's, and that all that good stuff that I used to consume. And I just, like, that's no longer me. I am the observer. I'm the witness to that. Because my teacher said, if you want to know higher awareness, if you want to get to that place, you have got to experience sobriety in your life. You can't be looking for your higher power in something external to yourself. It is the illusion of the ego. It's the idea that says, I have to have this. I have to feel good. I want to taste this. I must eat this. I must have that. And you know that as soon as you do it, you feel guilty and terrible about it. Then you go ahead and do it again and again. Because the ego never, ever gives you peace. When you want to be at peace, you get over here. And being at peace means I'm at perfect a health as I can be at in this moment. And when I transcended my addictions in my life, I heard the voice, 4:07 a.m., never forget it, January morning. You've tried everything else. Now try me. And I was clear. When you go to your source, and you look at the demands of the ego for temporary pleasure associated with horrendous guilt and fear and anxiety, you begin to see that you no longer are that. And once you have that divine awareness that who I am is not this, you no longer opt for the choice. And you're free. The weight comes off. The addictions go away. The fear goes away. The need to have that stuff to get high, to get past the fatigue, to have to eat in excess of what your body wants, all of that becomes just something you look at. And instead of being angry at it, you don't say to yourself, you know, I'm really going to love myself when I'm no longer fat. You don't say, I'm really going to love myself when I'm no longer an addict. What you say is, I am love. I love everything about that over there. I notice that. I witness that. I am at my source. And I want it to be as maximally functioning and happy and content as it's possible for it to be. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And every time you go back to the ego, which says, I need that pleasure, I have to have that drink, I have to eat that extra, you go back to your source and you say, thank you, God. Thank you. I turn it over to you. And when you're turning it over to you, what you really mean is, I reconnect with you. Rather than thinking I'm separate from you. It isn't like you're separate from me and I'm turning it over to you. It's like, I have believed that I was separate from it, and now I know I'm not separate from you or anything else. And if you want to manifest a divine, healthy body, free of addictions, what you do is go to your source and reconnect with it. And it just wants you to flow. With perfect health. It's so easy. It's so simple. And it's available to you right now. Carl Jung talked about the stages that we go through in our lives. And he said that the bottom stage, and these are all associated with those four pathways that I've been sort of in and out of all afternoon. He said the bottom stage is what he called the stage of the athlete. And this is the time in our life when our primary identification is with our physical body, what it is, how beautiful it is, how attractive it is, how strong it is, what it can do. That becomes our identity. And then he said, you move past that. And he said an interesting thing. He said, if you don't move past it, then ultimately you will get to a place where you'll have to come back. And he wasn't talking about reincarnation, but I like to. He said, it's just inevitable that you are on a spiritual journey. And until you learn that, you'll still be struggling. And so, before I give you the other three stages and give you these nine principles, all of which have been talked about already, I would like to give you a little poem that was written by Wallace McRae, a country western singer. He said, what is reincarnation? The cowboy asked his friend, and his friend replied, well, Slim, it happens when your life has reached its end. You see, they'll scrub your neck and they'll comb your hair, then they'll clean your fingernails. Then they're going to lay you in a padded box far away from life's travails. See, you and the box will go into a hole that's been dug into the ground, and reincarnation starts in when you're planted beneath that mound. You see, the box will melt down like the dirt and you inside, and then you're just beginning on your transformation ride. Pretty soon some rain is going to come and fall upon the ground till one day on your grave a little flower will be found. Now say a horse should wander by and graze upon that flower that once was you, but now is a vegetated bowel. Well, that little flower that the horse then ate up along with all its other seed becomes bone and fat and muscle. Essential to the steed. Of course, all that's consumed can't be used. So some passes through. Till that lays there on the ground, this thing that once was you. Now say I should wander by one day and gaze upon the ground, and I wonder and I ponder at this object that I found. It makes me think of reincarnation, of life and death and such. And I ride away concluding, Slim, you ain't changed all that much. Isn't that great? Wallace McRae. Just want to keep it, always keep it in perspective. So you get through the athlete stage. Some do, some don't. And then you go to what he called the stage of the warrior. And this is the stage where you finally take this athletic body, this thing of yours, of beauty, this thing that you've identified with, and you take it out into the world, and what you do with it is you do what warriors do. You attempt to defeat, to conquer, you get into competition with, you set goals, you work on yourself. What's in it for me is your mantra. What are my quotas, you ask over and over again. How can I get it? And if I don't get it before somebody else gets it, then they're going to get it instead, and I'll be left out. And there's an exhaustible supply of it, so I have to have my own. And there's this competition with, and this division, and this identifying each other and ourselves on the basis of appearances. You are a woman, I am a man. You are black, I am white. You are tall, I am short. You know, you are old, I am young. All of the duality, all of this stuff, this division stuff that warriors do. And then as you get along on this path, you reach a place where ultimately you realize this is going nowhere. You're hanging on to this path. It's like you're out standing on a precipice and you fall. And just as you're falling, there's this rock. And you grab a hold of the rock. And you're hanging onto the rock while you're falling. And the rock represents your tribe and all of the stuff that you've been told. And you hang on to it and hang on to it and hang on to it. And then one day you realize, I don't know why I'm hanging on to this thing. And you let go. And you realize it's not doing you a damn bit of good. You're still falling. You're still going exactly where you're going. But you're no longer encumbered by all of this stuff that you had to hang on to. And you are able to fly. And you're free. And so you transcend this need to be a warrior, to be in competition with. And by the way, this has nothing to do with age. Some get this very young. And some don't get it past the athlete stage. And the third stage is what he called the stage of the statesman. And this is the time in our lives when we stop asking the question, what are my quotas? And we begin to say, what are yours? And how may I serve becomes your mantra. You ask that question. And everything that you do revolves around this idea of being able to serve. And you understand that you come in with nothing, you're here, and you leave with nothing. The only thing you can do with your life is give it away. And so you begin to practice that. And as you do, you find that the stuff that you chased after when you were a warrior and when you were an athlete is now arriving in larger amounts because you're not attached to it. And your detachment from it allows it to flow. And that's what keeps the energy of manifestation going. It's the not interfering with its flow. You stop it from flowing and you stop the process. So you become a statesman. And then ultimately, you get to the highest stage. The stage that is called the stage of the spirit. Where you finally, finally understand that who you are is not this thing that is wearing away. It's not this dust. It's not this gristle and bone. It is, you learn what Jesus talked about when he said, be in this world, but not of this world, because you are not of this world. And this is not your home. And you know it. You don't just say it. And when you know it, you stop being a human being, as I've said many times, having a spiritual experience. You shift to being a spiritual being, having a human experience. And that shift allows you to do all that spiritual beings can do, all that you can do in your dream state, all that you can do when you are no longer attached to outcome. You are serving. I've always loved the story of Mother Teresa that I've told many times. When she was visiting Phoenix, Arizona, and she was going to be on station KTAR with my friend Pat McMahon, who was the morning host DJ there. And he was interviewing her, and he said this beautiful little woman came in, and she was about 4'10", weighed about 85 pounds, had no concern about her appearances. He said she radiated out a kind of consciousness. The whole room changed just when she walked into the room, which happens when you're around people like I described earlier with Kay Obera and Eduarda. When you're in that place, the energy of the room changes. You feel something coming from these people. They said of Jesus that when he went to a village, just his presence in the village and nothing more would change the consciousness of those around. Just by emanating out that kind of... And I know the feeling of having been around divine souls like that. It radiates out. And she walked into the room, and she was there to speak and dedicate a homeless shelter in Phoenix. And Pat said to her when she walked in, he said, "It is such an honor to meet you, Mother Teresa." He said, "Is there anything that I can do to help you with your cause?" And she was 83 years old at the time. She's now 86. Still ministering to the poor in Calcutta on the streets at 86. And said, when they asked her what she does, she said, "I simply see Jesus Christ every day in all of his distressing disguises." And when Pat asked her if there's anything I can do, she said, "No, it was nice of you to ask." And then he said to her, he said, "Mother Teresa, we have a very large radio station here. We have 50,000 watts clear channel. We could do a lot of publicity." And she looked at him with those tired eyes and said, "We don't really need publicity. What we're doing has nothing to do with publicity." And Pat said he was stunned by her honesty and her lack of ego and ashamed of his. And he said, "Is there... Perhaps we could raise some money, do a fundraiser here for you today." And she said, "Pat, what we're doing has nothing to do with money." And then he even felt worse. And finally, he almost got down on his knees and he said to her, he said, "Mother Teresa, isn't there anything that I can do for you?" And she said, "Pat, you seem so serious. There is one thing you can do." She said, "Tomorrow morning," she said, "get up at 4 a.m. and go out onto the streets of Phoenix and find someone who's living there who believes that he's alone and convince him that he's not. That's what you can do." It's hard for me to tell that story without getting choked. The people who are lost in our culture, in our world, are really the people who've lost their spirit. You can see it in their faces. You can see they don't feel connected. You can see they feel separate. They have given in so strongly to the demands of the ego, which says you are separate from all of this, that they've become addicts. They've become addicted to pleasure. They become addicted to this moment. And in that process of that addiction, they've lost their connection like the drop of water loses it to the ocean. And it can't get reconnected. It believes that it's alone. And just helping people to reconnect. That's why AA has been so effective and nothing else in treating people with addictions. Because it teaches them to reconnect. To stop looking for your higher power out there and reconnect to it. And when you reach that highest stage, that stage of the spirit, you know. And then you understand how these principles work. And here are, as I sat down to write on Marco Island in January, here are those 9 principles. And allow you to do what you want with them. And you'll be able to read about them as they came to me. The first was very clear. It said simply, you must know that you have a higher self and that it is separate from the ego. You just have to know it. The second says, you must trust in it. And trust is a very, very important word. You can't just know it and say, "Oh, that's okay." Now you have to say, "I know that when I trust in myself, I'm really trusting in the same wisdom that created me." That's how strong your trust has to be. In other words, when I trust in it, I'm trusting in God. because that is something that I am connected to and not apart, not separated from. The third principle for manifesting and putting your attention on what you'd like to manifest and having it show up in your life is called understanding that you are not an organism in the environment, but that instead you are an organism slash environment. You are not an organism in this environment. You and the environment are the same. If I want to describe myself as walking across this stage, and that's what I want to describe, I cannot describe this process of walking across the stage without including the stage. Can I? I cannot separate myself from it. Otherwise, it's just legs moving, and it's not walking across the stage. And I also cannot describe this experience of walking across the stage in any authentic way without describing the oxygen that I breathe as I do it, and my blood that is circulating, and all of that which is taken in by me in this process is a part of me. Most of us, through our tribal conditioning, have come to believe that who we are is an organism in the environment, and we are here to push it around and to straighten it out and to fix it. And so we push the environment around, and we cut things down, and we bulldoze. And we think somehow that our role is to control it, never ever understanding that without it, we cannot exist. We and it are the same. There is only one air. There is only one fire to keep us all warm. There are many little bonfires, but there's only one fire. There's only one water and many little glasses, but it's all the same water that we all breathe. And you could live in Afghanistan and have dark skin, and I can live as an Eskimo in Alaska. And if my heart stops working or my liver needs to be replaced, I can take your liver over there and put it in here. We all share the same organs. And I can take the vital force that flows through me and put it into any one of you, and it will keep you alive and sustain you. There is no separation between us and each other, and us and all that is in this environment. And if you understand this, you simply understand. I use a metaphor in the book of a plum tree. And if you look at a plum tree, and you say, okay, what part of the plum tree is not plum? Like if you take a pit and put it in the ground, and then watch as the little shoots come out, and then the little shoots turn into a tree, and then the tree has bark on it, and then the bark will form around the tree, and the tree will then develop branches, and then the branches will have leaves, and then the leaves will produce blossoms, and the blossoms will produce pits, and the pits will produce plums, and the plums will have meal in them, and they will also have skin around them. What part of that is not plum? And where do these plums come from? Another planet, and you looked at that, you'd say, wow, the damn thing just plums. It just plums. And you would see that it's a verb, not a noun, that there are no nouns. That's only what we learn in school with our discipline and our wisdom. Everything is constantly changing and in action. And just, I mean, we don't say, well, here's how it works. There is a spiritual world, a spirit world, called plum essence. And plum essence is over here. And it's not in the physical world. And then something magical happens, and the plum essence, spirit, turns into plum particles. From the world of plum spirit essence comes plums. And lo and behold, we have something coming from that world into this world. And plums literally come from another world. We don't say that, do we? We simply say, it's all one. Every aspect of it is, there's a oneness. There's a combination. Same thing is true of you. If you stood back as an observer and watched the planet, and watched the vegetation, and watched the water, and watched the rain, and watched it over millions of years, billions of years, and just watched it, you would say, you know, the damn thing just peoples. It just peoples. But we don't do that. We need to carve it up. We need to say there is a spirit world. And out of this spirit world comes people. But you don't come from another world. You grow out of this one. The only one there is. And that thing that we call the spirit world is not separate from this world. Any more than plums show up from the spirit world of plums. It's all connected. It's all one. And you can't function without it. Now, once you know that you are not a organism in the environment, but instead you're an environ organism, all one, once you know this, then you know that everything you would like to manifest is also in this environment, and it also shares the same intelligence, the divine essence, that you share. You can't be separate from it. You can't describe it separate. So now you have the third principle. It's already here, and it's in me, and it's in that. And I'm not disconnected from it. And then the fourth principle is one that I call the principle of attraction. You know within you that you have the power to attract what you process or perceive to be missing from your life. You have the power to have it show up in you. That is something called energy, which flows through everything. It's the same energy that allows the planets to stay in their orbit, that allows a star to fall across the sky, also allows a thought to cross your mind. It's all the same energy. The same energy that spins the planet and moves it and makes the waves and allows for the tides to come in and to leave, that same energy that controls all of the fluids on this planet also controls you and all the fluids that you are, which is all that you are. And you have more than just this divine force within you. You have the energy to bring things to the place that you are in your life. You have that. And you have to know that. And then the fifth principle simply says, I know that I am worthy of receiving that which I would like to attract. The minute that you feel that you're not worthy of having it show up in your life, you stop the flow. You go from unconditional love to conditional. And that's why I spent an hour earlier this afternoon on being God. Because once you know that you are what God is doing, then you know that that is very worthwhile indeed. There's no mistakes there. There's nothing that is of not value, of no value. And so, understanding your worthiness and accepting that what shows up in your life you are entitled to, and knowing that life is not only giving, but it is receiving. And so I am willing to receive the abundance of the universe. Every time you take a breath, you participate in the receiving and giving of the life force. Watch. Receive. You got to give it back. Or you die. Receive. Give back. Receiving and giving. It's the way of the universe. And you have to be worthy of it. And then the sixth principle is the principle of unconditional love. It is understanding that this life force and this energy does not have any conditions on it, and it is in harmony with everything else. That the very flow of energy inside every cell of your being is something, the glue that holds it all together, is this thing called unconditional, compassionate love. And you have to have the same love for it as God has for you. The same love and the same patience. And the seventh principle I call sounds have power. There are two forces at work here, two dimensions. There's the etheric dimension, which is the dimension of thought, and there's the dimension of form. and sound is the intermediate barrier, an intermediate dimension between them. And that's what this CD is all about. Practicing the sound of God. Using the sound. This is what I was taught by Guruji. Use the sound of ah. The sound that you make that requires no effort. Ah. And when you make the sound of ah, what you do is you do it with effortless perfection. You don't have to move your lips, you don't have to move your jaw, you don't have to move your teeth, you don't have to move your tongue. As you watch my mouth right now, every time I make a sound, I am moving my teeth and my lips and my jaw or my tongue. When I stop doing that, and stop working, and take in a breath, and move nothing, ah, is the only sound that I can make. It's the sound that's in the name for the Creator in every language. God, Allah, Buddha, Krishna, Yahweh. The list goes on and on and on and on. Someone sent me the 1,000 names of God. And all of them have the sound of ah. Wherever you go, and you repeat that sound, as I explain on this CD, and practice it in the morning and practice it in the evening, and I guarantee it. The eighth principle is called the principle of detachment, or infinite patience. In A Course in Miracles, there's this wonderful quote. It says, infinite patience produces immediate results. And that seems like such a paradox to our egos and our left brain. But let me explain it to you very quickly what it means. It says, when you know that you are, and you are infinitely patient, you relax in peace. You let go, and you know that you have to have the same patience with God that God has always had with you. And the minute that you do, you are at peace. You're at peace. The minute that you detach and let go and say, okay, I now know it will show up. I know it. I'm infinitely patient. It'll show up when it's supposed to, on time. You're at peace. Now, whether it shows up or not, who cares? Because now you're at peace, and that's all you want to be. That's what enlightenment is. So it gives infinite patience, produces immediate result. What's the result? Peace. And then the minute that you detach from it, you're free. There's an old saying. I love it. It says, I ask for everything in order that I might enjoy life. I was given life in order that I might enjoy everything. You have life, and you detach. And you don't tell the universal divine force, you don't tell the ocean how to produce its offspring. You don't tell the ocean how to be. You connect to it and flow with it. And it will show up in exactly the proportion it is supposed to. In bizarre ways. And you think it's going to come over here? And you think it's going to be a soulmate who's going to think like you and act like you and pee like you and do everything that you do? Uh-uh. No. It's going to be over here. A divine teacher. Serena is going to show right up in your life. And you will honor and bless her. And the last and final principle is the principle of generosity and service and gratitude. You are grateful for all that shows up in your life. You are generous with it. You give and you receive. You receive and you give. You keep it flowing. And you shift out of what's in it for me into service. And there are the nine principles. I've laid it out as well as I know how to do it. Maybe I should just conclude with the most profound quote from A Course in Miracles that I know. In every moment of your life, you have a choice. The choice? You can either be a host to God or a hostage to your ego. God bless you and thank you. Thank you very much.